All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting Wednesday, August 28th, 2019, 7 o'clock. We'll do the roll call. Councilmember Sherwood.
Here.
Councilmember Vick.
Here.
Councilmember Gibson.
Here.
And Councilmember Holcomb.
Here.
Great, thank you. There is no unfinished business for the special meeting tonight. We're jumping right into new business. New business is two items: bid opening for the Stevensville Airport reconstruction and new Moonfield project, and fiscal year 2020 preliminary budget presentation. She's ready for it. We'll go ahead and proceed with the bid opening consistent with municipal code. The town clerk opens the bids with council present. And before we jump into the bids real quick, Monica, let's let Tyler give the council an overview of the project, kind of head to toe as to what it is we expect.
Yeah, so like the mayor said, this is a bid opening for the Stevensville Airport. This is for airport improvements, including full reconstruction of both aprons and reconstruction of this old portion of the parallel taxiway, and also the addition of new Midfield taxiway. So this project's been in the works for many years. This has been a high priority for the FAA. And so in order to maintain the safety of the airport, this project's gonna solve that. So, I don't know if anybody has any questions or if you should.
Craig?
I like Tom, what has happened is we've planned a long time for this. The council's working hard, or our board has worked hard to get this with Marcy Merritt. And what happened is we had put in for some funds that were 100% match last year, but we didn't get them. And the FAA in a finance meeting this year had some $2 million fall through on another project because they were not shovel ready, and the FAA recommended us, because of Morrison Merrily and having their engineering done and the planning that we'd done, were shovel ready. So she inserted us into the schedule. So instead of being a 2-year period, we're doing this in about 2 months, and Tyler has spent most of his weekends in the last 2 months and several nights working on this. All of us have been kind of rushing around to make the deadline that the FAA assigned, and these are drop-dead deadlines. So we didn't call this meeting, the FAA actually, but the person who called the meeting, and you guys, thank you very much for facilitating our procedures here. And Tyler has all of the details, but basically that is it. Because we've done some good planning, we were put forth by the, recommended by the FAA. Morrison Merrily has done extra above and beyond work to get us to this stage.
Okay, I think it's a good spot to go ahead and open the bids. So the clerk will open the bids. Tyler will assist in tabulating whatever those results look like, and we'll review.
Okay, first contractor is First Mark.
So I would be opening them according to timeline. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
So I'm just going to verify and make sure that they're responsive. They've checked all the boxes. So completed bid form, completed prices, and words and figures. Okay, they do have that.
The completed words and figures?
Correct, yeah. And then, let's see, 10% bid bond enclosed. Equal opportunity certification. Okay, I got this in the next one. Okay, equal employment opportunity has been checked, so we're good on that. Completed tax delinquency and felony conviction certification, that has been checked. Bidders list, they've got all of their subcontractors listed here. Buy American agreement. Signed and dated. Okay, we've got that. Contractor registration number. We've got that. And there are three addendums with this, and all three have been acknowledged. So they are responsive. I'm just going to read the total. There's four schedules, so I'll just read the total of all four. Okay, so the total for First Mark is $1,695,303. Just so everybody knows, the engineer's estimate for this was $1,661,000, so they're pretty close. Okay. Challenger construction out of Columbia Falls. Okay, they have filled out the bid form with numbers and figures, so that's good. They have a bid bond, 10% of the total, so they're good on that. We did equal opportunity certification. Check, we got that. Completed tax delinquency and felony conviction certification, that has been checked. Completed bidders list, we've got that. Evidence of competency and financial responsibility. That has been filled out. By American certification. They've indicated that everything will be comply with by American. So we're good on that. Bid proposal signed and dated. Signature, it's been dated, and we have the Montana contractor's registration number on there, and they have acknowledged all three addendums, and so they are responsive. So the total bid amount for Challenger. $1,837,160.50. Okay. There you go. And the last one is Knife River. Knife River, they've got their bid bond at the very front of this, so they're good on their bid bond, 10% of the amount. Okay, they've got completed bid form with unit prices and words and figures. Completed equal opportunity certification has been checked. Completed tax delinquency and felony conviction certification has been checked. Complete bidders list has been filled out, so we're good there. Evidence of competency and financial responsibility has been filled out. They've actually included the a separate evidence of financial responsibility attached. Just has some additional information on their financials. So we're good on that. Let's see, Buy American. They've indicated they are going to, all their materials will be Buy American. So that one's good. Contractor's registration number is on there, and they have also acknowledged all three debtors. A toll with Knife River. $1,497,413.20. So the apparent low bidder this time is Knife River. And so I'll go back to the office and double check all their math, make sure that there's no discrepancies with anything, put together bid tabs for that, and then I guess if it's okay with the town, recommend award to the FAA, just recommend it at this time to continue the process.
Sure. So we received word, FAA, we told you originally that the FAA deadline was set to September 13th. They've graciously moved that deadline to September 10th because there's no time like crunch time. And so we're kind of hastily putting these pieces together for FAA so that hopefully we can secure this funding that they've earmarked for us. So with that, the recommendation would be consistent with the town's policies and what the FAA expects, that we recommend award a bid to Knife River contingent on Tyler's tabulation and confirmation of the bids. And we will reconvene for another special meeting next week. We have to wait for some documentation to come back from FAA before we can call that meeting. So we'll give that meeting the required notice. As soon as we hear when we'll have that, then we'll call the meeting together and you'll make the decision to award a bid and confirm that process.
What date are you looking at next week?
Well,
because I'm not
we're looking at our hope is the 5th.
I'm leaving. I'm not here. Okay. That wasn't scheduled. I have to.
No, it wasn't a schedule.
I have to go to Helena on the 5th and 6th.
How about the other three of you? Evening meeting.
But that would be only here? That would be only for this.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the special meeting would only be to award the bid for the contract or for the construction project, right?
Yes.
So, and that's a piece we have to do for FAA's process. So, and you want to formally award. So we're targeting the 5th, but that may flux. We may have to pull it depending on how quickly FAA gets back to us. We may have to do it on the 9th of September, which is a Monday evening. We hope it doesn't have to be that late.
But we'll still make it work, though.
We're at their mercy. So, and fortunately, we want the money, so we're at their mercy. You know. So, okay, are there any questions for Tyler with Morrison Mary Lee on the bids tonight or the project? Okay, thank you guys.
Thanks.
All right, we'll move into the real meat of tonight's meeting, the fiscal year 2020 preliminary budget presentation.
I just have a couple questions, Mayor, before we start.
Sure.
So I assume, I picked this up yesterday. You're going to go through this, the whole packet?
I'm going to hit some highlights of the packet. We do have the packet available on the screen, so if you have specific questions in the packet, we can hit those.
The only highlights I would like to suggest, I received my little 200-page municipal government handbook yesterday.
Sure.
And I glanced through it. Excuse me. And I glanced through it, and the four basic things: how much money do we have to start the budget year, beginning cash available? How much money do we expect to receive, revenue? How much do we expect to spend, increases, decreases? And how much do we expect to have left at the end? So will that be?
Correctly.
And then my question last time was last year's budget, what was appropriated and what was spent. Is that in here? I couldn't find it.
You know, it's not as a total, come to think of it.
Well, I would request, because obviously I don't think we're going to make a decision tonight.
You're not allowed to, really.
But I would request that we have the next meeting what the budget was and what was spent.
Yes, and we'll in fact provide that for you tonight.
Okay. And then just one more thing I don't want to dominate. I want to ask the other council members and you. So how do we want to proceed with this tonight? Do we want to ask questions as you go through it?
Well, I've got a presentation for you.
And then at the end.
Right. So what I'll do is I'll go up to the screen so that Councilmember Holcomb can swing around and see the screen, because that'll just be easier for her. So I have some slides that kind of hit highlights within our budget. If you guys want to move chairs, you're totally welcome to just move a seat down if you'd like and sit in my chair. I'm okay with that. I'll just stand. Okay. So the document that we've uploaded, and for those who are joining us online tonight, the slideshow is included in the online packet. We uploaded that this evening so that they could see. You can't see the screen online, so if those folks want to look at that, they're welcome to. You have it for you tonight, the preliminary budget, which was uploaded yesterday. And I apologize for kind of the lateness and not giving you a full 48 hours or longer. We'd love to give you a week to review that document. But we're really trying to ram and get this wrapped up, given the flux that we've seen in the organization over the last few months. So I'm here to present the budget with a slideshow, give kind of a broad picture as to what the goals are of the budget going into the fiscal year. It pulls some things out of the packet you received, but it doesn't really necessarily get into the meat of that. But we're obviously here tonight to answer whatever questions you have with that. And then once council's questions have all been addressed and we're comfortable, then during the public comment session, I'm happy to take questions as well from that. So I wanted to walk you through, let's see if this works. There we go. Just to review what the purpose of the budget is. Remember that the budget is a plan, it's not a hard and fast, other than the bottom line, it's not necessarily a hard and fast rule that we, it's a flexible document. So even coming out of tonight, we'll likely make some modifications based on your feedback and based on the information we continue to receive in regards to what expenditures look like and certainly what revenues look like. So for citizens, for you folks, it's a picture of the town government and what our intentions are of the year. For the town council, it serves as a policy tool and expression of what council's goals are for the community. And then for those of us in management, it's used as an operating guide and control mechanism to make sure that the expenditures don't run off on us and that we're living under the goals that the community wants to see. So how we budget altogether is we've over the last couple of years seen a transition in how we've been budgeting. We've seen a lot of growth in our budget in Stevensville. Last year we saw the introduction of a more rigorous zero-based budgeting principle where we require department heads to start at zero and justify everything they ask for. And then this year we're transitioning into a phase where we talk about outcomes and why or what is it that you, what is the outcome of the money you're spending versus what are the pieces of equipment or the very specific things, the paper clips that we're purchasing with them. So you can see a comparison of how we've done things in the past and how we plan to move forward more in a outcome-based budgeting principle. So, you know, when we started, we would typically use what we spent last year as a baseline and say, okay, what modifications need to be made from that number? Did we underspend, did we overspend? Starting going forward, what we'd like to see departments do is look at what are the goals, what are the priorities and goals of that department or of the organization in the coming fiscal year. When it comes to funding targets, we usually would say, okay, certain agencies would receive funding based on however important we felt they were in the organization. Now we're looking at what outcome does that agency or that department produce for the community in order to justify that funding. Previously, we would look at how allocations would be spent. We'd sit and we'd go, line by line, object by object, as to how many bags of rubber bands are they buying. It's a bit of an extreme, but that's how specific we were in the object lines. We're trusting the folks that work for us. And that carry out the public trust and carry out the public service, that those folks know how to manage their budgets. We should be able to give them a lot of money, and we should be able to see the results of that money. And so we're worrying less, especially at the council and mayor's level, we're worrying less about exactly what that money is being spent on and more about what outcomes we want out of that money. And what are the results? Are they performing well or not? Then when it comes to talking about the budget, and inevitably we go through processes where we have to either make reductions or move money around, we want to put the emphasis on not necessarily what we're going to cut out of the budget, but what are the programs that are performing successfully, where is the community's dollars best spent, so what are we keeping in our budget versus necessarily what we're going to pull out of it. So that's kind of the philosophy behind the administration and how we move forward. And in your preliminary budget document that you have, you'll see performance standard charts in there that have some sample data. Some of them have actual data in them, but by and large, most of them have sample data. And the reason for that is because we've not necessarily tracked performance measures in this organization in this fashion before. The department heads probably have a vague idea of how they're doing. One example, fire and police know their responses and their calls for service, so that's just a number they track every year. But Public Works and Parks and Recreation, some of the other departments don't necessarily have, haven't looked at those numbers or haven't tracked what they're doing. And so this is a way to move into that. And so that's why you'll see the sample data, is because we don't have that data yet. We'd like to spend the next year preparing some back data, but we really like to use this year as a baseline and say, okay, from this year forward, we know we have that data, we know how the departments are performing, and therefore we can justify or not the funding that they receive for certain programs. So going through the budget process, and I'm going to kind of refer back to the budget committee, who's the ad hoc budget committee, who's here with us tonight. But to walk us through how we got to this point, or where we're going, is the department made their requests. We gave them their packets, and we said make the requests to the administration. That usually occurs anywhere in between March and May. The department requests are then compiled, brought into a proposed budget this year. We made modifications based on what funds we had available and then what the priorities of the organization as a whole through different discussions, as well as what the priorities expressed by the responsible himself for the organization that year. So then in comes the ad hoc budget committee. Year after year, we hold budget workshops with council, and we very seldom see the public showing at those workshops. So as a way to encourage public input, we sought volunteers that would bring some experience and knowledge to the table that would make good decisions for our community and give the council that input. So we had some level of public input outside or before the public hearing, and that's generally where we see the crowd show. So we had three residents serve on the mayor's ad hoc committee for the budget, and we held two separate meetings to review the proposed budget, and then they provided feedback and insight in the community's expectations for the new budget. I'm going to defer to Kendra Ruff, who's here to speak on behalf of the three-member committee and kind of introduce who they are and what they have brought forth.
Hello, I'm Kendra Ruff, and the other two members of the committee are here as well, Stan Schweising and Jim Chandler. I'll make this short because I know you have a lot to cover, but I just wanted to say that the committee did the best that we could in reviewing the budget. We believe the proposed budget represents a reasonable cost for town services. It has a sufficient amount of appropriations for capital improvements, which we believe is a good approach to maintenance of ongoing commitments and investment in the town's future. Our proposal is in your packet, so I won't go through all of that, but a couple of highlights. We believe that one of the best things the town could do is to begin to invest in planning through the development of a new master plan for Stevensville. And we also believe that investment in terms of providing a school resource officer is a great investment in the youth of the town. Like I said, the remainder of the recommendation is in your packet tonight. And if you have any questions, let us know. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Kendra. So the ad hoc committee has been through this budget. They made their recommendations. They provided their feedback. And it was a very informative process and quite enlightening. So I appreciate the time that they put into it because it was a lot to digest. We're here tonight at the preliminary budget presentation to the town council so that you have a chance to review the budget, get your hands on it, massage it a little bit and figure out exactly where we're at. And then based on how you digest that and how you'd like to move forward, we need to schedule a public hearing for public input onto the budget. We'll publish that hearing in the paper and then hold a public hearing so that the public can give their input. We obviously would encourage public input tonight as well so that we can make any modifications ahead of time instead of trying to crunch it between the public hearing and final adoption. We hope to see final adoption before the October 1st deadline. That's the deadline set in stone by the state. It says you have your budget adopted by the state. And that happens to be October 1st this year. 2 years ago, our budget wasn't adopted until November, and it resulted in a finding on our audit because our budget was passed late. We don't want that audit finding again, so we're hoping to sail right into that October 1st deadline. Um, So we'll review the cash, and there's some important things that we need to address here, and Robert's here for any questions that the council may have. And that is our cash currently, because of the transitions we've seen in staff and in the organization, our reconciliation is behind in the office. And so we are not reconciled up to June 30th yet. Robert's working very diligently on that. He's doing some cleanup on some payroll liabilities and some other quirks that we've found in the system over the years. He's cleaned that up, and so we're in a good position to move forward on reconciliation. That reconciliation, though, is going to modify what our projected beginning fund balance for working capital looks like. We've broken this down by fund for you, and then there's a total of all funds here at the end. So the other thing we bring to your attention, and we were aware of this as we saw retirements and those types of things. One example is the building fund last year, you'll notice, went over their budget altogether. And that was because of an unanticipated retirement in that fund. And so generally what we would do under normal circumstances is at the end of the fiscal year, we bring a budget amendment forward to the council and say, okay, here are the shortcomings of the budget. Here's where we need to modify our bottom line for spending authority. And we bring that budget amendment forward and pass that, and that would rectify some of the overages we see in those types of funds, because we can't project some of that. That didn't happen at the end of this fiscal year because of transitions, and so we're proposing that we bring a budget amendment forward to the council sooner rather than later that modifies that. And so we'll make those assumptions in cash so that you can see the effects of that budget amendment and how that affects where the budget ends up next year as far as cash reserves. Questions from the council on the cash situation? We're confident that we're within, you know, 1 to 3% each of these numbers, analyzing those. So you're not going to necessarily see 10 or 25% decrease or increase in funding in the general fund. It's within 1 to 3% of what's in that account. It's just we need to reconcile and absolutely make sure that everything that came in and out of the general fund and all funds combined is in the right place. So, and I guess the positive piece to this reconciliation catch-up, which unfortunately it doesn't happen any faster now than it does when you do it at the month end, it's still time is time, but the positive piece to this is that Robert now has a chance to get into some history, very recent history of the financials, to kind of help gain some knowledge as to what how things operate in the organization. And he's also performing a review of all the activity from May 1st all the way through to today. So he's reviewing everything from shortly before April left, reviewing everything while I served in that position, and the adjustments that I made, and then during his learning period, so to speak. So Robert's auditing background will serve us well in that cash reconciliation, finding any hiccups or glitches that we need to address. So as a revenue and expenditure review, overall, the total budget altogether, you can see the revenues are broken down by fund type. Over half of our revenues are received in the enterprise fund, or enterprise funds. That would include water and sewer, airport, and those that are operated as a business. Then the next chunk there is the general fund, which makes up about a quarter of the revenue that we receive. So overall, our estimate, and I apologize if the picture is cut off, overall revenues are estimated at $2.4 million, and that's an increase of about $200,000 organization-wide. So it's not a giant increase, but it is a bump. We saw a 13% increase in taxable valuation this year. So for the general fund specifically, taxes make up over half of that revenue source, and we'll get into the general fund in just a moment. fees and charges for services in the general fund are increased to avoid additional levies and direct the impacts of those services to those who are using the services. So Mrs. Smith isn't necessarily paying for a service she's not using or has no benefit of. The wastewater and water bill increases, which were adopted 5 years ago and were established to happen every year on an annual basis in November, we're at number five of those five increases. And so in January, you'll see the administration come forward with another proposal for some sort of systematic increase so that we're not faced in another situation in 10, 20 years where we need to raise water bills by 15 or 20%. Yes, Mr. Gibson.
Just a quick, we'll probably get into it later. So right now you're saying that the water rate is going to go up 3% in November.
Correct. That was adopted by...
But isn't there a large reserve in the water and the bond and the wastewater fund?
There are reserves in those funds.
That's quite large.
That are dedicated, yes.
Dedicated they're, to...
Robert can tell us. We looked at those balances today. It's on your cash report. We have operating cash in the water fund. We have a year of bond payments in the water fund, which is actually a second year of bond payments.
But the fees are separate from the bond.
So yes, so there's the bond structure, and the bond fund has a year of payments in it as a reserve. And then the water fund also has another year of payments. And so this organization has kept 2 years of bond payments in reserve just in case. That was a decision the council made 4 years
ago. I'll get into it later. Go ahead. I will.
And then there's also cash that's set aside for short-lived assets and depreciation. So we have an amount of money that's set aside for those, you know, things like well field failures and pumps and those assets that have depreciation and need to be replaced. So the water fund does have a reserve. There's also a chunk of money in there that's also set aside. The rate structure that's set up to do this was set aside to start saving some cash for the water storage project. So a good portion of that reserve is dedicated to a project which we're entering into. Over the last fiscal year we've undertaken and we continue to work with HDR on getting that project underway as a reality. So we're not quite at the construction piece yet, but we hope to leverage that cash.
We can get into it later, but I mean there will be TSEPT again next legislative session.
Right.
Up to $750,000 per community, plus matching grants. We can talk about this later.
So, and that's part of what the rate study will do for us, and that's what we're doing this fall, is studying the rates, making sure that we're not overcharging customers, what will keep up with the pace of inflation, what do the water and sewer bills really need to look like? So, you know, if you look at your water and sewer bill in an itemized way, the bonds are really where the meat of your bill is. That's, you know, the bond payments are really.
So that's why you could cut the fees, it wouldn't hurt that much.
Absolutely. In general, the government agencies, you can see their largest percentage of expenditures is personnel. In our case, you see a good chunk of that. As delineated in some of the graphs in your packet, shows that we're investing in capital as well. So maybe not quite such a large portion is personnel organization-wide, but it is, or all funds combined, but for general fund, for example, we do have a higher percentage of personnel costs. And that percentage is actually at 65%. So 65% of the money we're spending in general fund is dedicated towards personnel. Wages and benefits. We don't necessarily take capital items out of the general fund. Those usually happen in capital improvements. Here's a review of the general fund, just to kind of show you how it's performed over the last 10 years or so, and the estimate of fiscal year 2020. So you can see as late as 2009 was the last time we saw revenue lower than expenditures, and our fund balance just slightly over $100,000. And this is just general fund, not all funds combined. From 2009 and then into 2015, We saw increases in our fund balance, over $400,000 in that fund. And you can see, logically, the blue bar is higher than the red bar, and so that built a reserve up. The cities and towns of Montana are limited to only carrying 50% of their appropriations in any fund. After that, you either need to kick it to capital or reduce your levy. You can't have more than half of your expenditures in your reserve.
So this is, and we'll get that, so this is showing last year that your revenues were higher than what you spent.
Correct.
But now you're showing that the revenues are lower than what you're asking to spend.
Correct. And the reason behind that is a large portion of the expenditure in 2020 is a $40,000 transfer out of the general fund into the capital fund. And so that's not going to be offset by revenue. We're basically saying that's an excess in the general fund. We want to bring our general fund balance down and put some money away for capital. So the same thing happened in 2016. A portion of that discrepancy, not all of it, but a good chunk of that, was another transfer that the council made from the general fund into, I believe, the airport received some money, capital improvement fund received some money, economic development received some money. They dispersed it out into some other funds because we were hitting that 50% threshold. So not all of that red bar is that money. I believe that in 2016 we saw some overrun of expenditures. But you can see, and that's also the rationale behind why the fund balance declined. So in 2017, the previous administration, you can see our fund balance dropped even more significantly. I don't believe there was any transfers in that year. Our expenditures were up as well. And then in 2018, you can see we exceeded our revenues exceeded our expenditures. We got back on that trend. It carried through into 2019. The general fund saw a surplus of roughly $70,000. So part of that $70,000 is being transferred into capital. The other part of it is being used in the general fund to offset one-time expenses, not routine expenses. Any questions on general fund balances, expenditures, or anything? I can tell you, because it was asked for. I wanted to tell you what the budget was for last year, but it'll take me a while to find out. The actual of what we spent is in the document as a previous year actual, but
did you overspend or underspend last year's budget?
Underspend.
By how much?
Well, the general fund was $70,000. I don't know the overall. Robert can look at that for us. Do you know that off?
Okay.
You can look it up. It would show, Robert, if you ran an actual versus budget for 6 of 19 in Rock Mountain, the last page would show it. Do you want to run that for us? So in revenue and general fund, we estimate revenues to be $660,832, and 53% of that is from property taxes, 32% of that is the state entitlement share, which we continue to work with the League of Cities and Towns to protect from raids that sometimes happen in the state legislature. We won't see that again until the next legislative session. But we don't like to see reductions in that funding because obviously it makes up over 30% of our funds. 10% of that is charges for services, which we see increases in additions to, as we talked about or discussed earlier, and it was vetted through, the budget committee, was instead of raising or levying increase of taxes, we wanted to see those services used by a certain demographic or a certain person be paid for by that person. And so, for example, a special event wouldn't necessarily, there are impacts of events to the organization naturally through streets and alleys, fire protection, and police. There's just those things happen. We want to encourage events, not necessarily discourage them, But we do want the event not to burden the tax dollar in Stephen, the taxpayer in Stephensville in an unreasonable way. And so we're looking at we're proposing increases in business license fees, event permits, and recreation fees. And then we're also looking at making an addition of recreation facility fees, things like pavilion reservations. We see dozens of pavilion reservations come through the office. That usually means that we have a public works staff member hang a sign on the pavilion, reserving it. We're not charging for that service currently, and it's an interruption in the workflow of the workday. And so, there's a modest stream of revenue there that we can capture.
So how much more revenue in the general fund in 20 than last year? How much is coming in? I assume there's more.
Yeah.
I assume there's more.
Revenue, well, that's our hope, yeah. So last year's revenue, if we look at revenue versus emissions. Last year's budgeted revenue was $655,009.
So it's about the same.
And we're at $5,000. Right? $660,000. We received more revenue. So our revenue estimates are conservative. We received an actual of $676,000, 616. So our estimates are $15,000 below in the general fund what we estimated we actually, or what we received last year. In expenditures, you'll see $720,465. That includes a transfer of capital. It also includes spend out of carryover from last year.
So what is your proposed increase in general fund expenditures? I assume that's mostly personnel, correct?
Yes.
And that's general fund?
General fund.
You don't have to do that now, Mayor.
Okay. Yeah, it's just,
so basically what that shows, that hopefully you do have higher revenue, you're asking to spend $60,000 more above what your revenue estimate is in general fund.
Correct. And to reiterate, the rationale behind that is we've earmarked some specific items that would occur once versus ready. We don't want to use a carryover to fund a police officer, for example, because next year, if we don't have that carryover, then we don't have a police officer. So we look at specific one-time type of expenditures that we make in order to designate to that fund. And as we talked about, what are the increases? The emphasis this year is staffing in the police department. There's a 0.5 staff member in Public Works out of the general fund, and there's an increase to your salary as well. So I'm going to cover the rest of the presentation covers the priority outcomes of it, or the things we really want this budget to pull off for us, and address specific things that or pieces that we want to accomplish over the coming year. And so that is looking at the administrative workload and organization management, coverage of staffing and public safety, traffic and pedestrian safety in school zones and park areas, those trouble areas we see speeding and we've received complaints on, bolstering the infrastructure and reliability that the infrastructure has, and how effective our infrastructure is to the community. We address community pedestrian access and look at quick and efficient response to the Public Works Department and those functions that they fulfill on a regular basis. So first off, which I imagine probably drew the crowd here tonight, is discussing the administrative workload and organization management. Just to kind of give you at least what, my interpretation of what the expectation of the mayor's office is administering the town's operations and providing overall leadership, direction, coordination, support for the activities of the workforce, as well as information to you folks, the council, in an effort to make sure that your ability is supported in making good policy decisions for the organization, for our community. The large pieces of the mayor's office budget this year is not the purchase of a vehicle, but the purchase of a laptop, so that I'm not restricted to only using the desktop that's currently in my office for work. If I choose to work from home, or if I am on town travel at a conference, I have no way to connect back into the office outside of my cell phone.
And that's really, how much is that? I mean, we each get a computer, and how much is it?
The budget for that is under $1,000. So it's not a lot of money. It's pretty immaterial when you look at the entire scope of the general fund. But if you looked at that specific budget, that is an increase in small and capital equipment. It's not something you would have a regular purchase on. And so that's one of those items you would look at and go, okay, that is something that would be, carryover use versus a regular routine expense. And so that's the hope there is that helps me connect to the office. If I'm not in the office, the staff still has my assistance, and if I need to electronically remote in, I have that ability to. The salary increase is contained in this budget. It is an increase in salary for increased hours. And that's primarily so that I'm accessible by the staff and the citizens and council on a day-to-day basis. So that's been the routine for the last 3 months at least. And it's been successful. And based on the committee, the budget committee didn't necessarily get into salaries and wages in a very specific way, but they obviously raised an eyebrow at this idea that, well, we're significantly increasing the salary of the mayor. So in your document, you see some background justification, and we'll cover some of that tonight. The employee staffing of the administration alone, if you look at the staffing breakdowns to where people are allocated and who's working where, for fiscal year 2020, that FTE is 1.2 people. So that's not including the mayor, that's just including staff members. So we have 1.2 of our 15-member staff that are dedicated just to administration, and that's including assistance in the Legislative Services Division of our organization, supporting the folks and the commissions. So breaking down the salary and workload, as we've discussed, and part of the rationale behind increasing the salary in the first place back in May and June was that three key positions in the administrative office had seen turnover that left all three with less than 6 months of experience in the town organization. They're very bright people, they're very intelligent people, and they're very resourceful people, but they need that day-to-day contact with a supervisor to help them be successful in that position.
certainly long-term to help the organization out. If they're going to be effective for us, they need that oversight and that sounding board to say, you know, is this, am I being reassured that what I'm doing in my job is the right thing?
Was 2018 and 17 basically the same, 10,000?
Yes. Again, up until May 19, we were compensating the mayor's office at 10,000 per year, and for the expectation of no less than 10 hours a week. Previous to that, it was raised to $20,000 a year with the expectation of no less than 20 hours a week.
And when was that?
What, 15, 16? 2015 and 2016.
Was raised to 20,000?
It was raised to 20,000 with at least 20 hours a week in the position.
So why was it reduced to 10,000 in 18 and 19?
Cost savings.
Ms.
Holcomb.
It was raised when Mayor Minmack was mayor. It was raised because of everything that was going on with the water, the sewer, but then
that way might get sewer.
But then it went back down because the other mayors that came in didn't feel that it was right to be taking that money from the town. So the mayors lowered.
Historically speaking, let's say in the last 9 years, it's basically been 10,000, except for a short period of time, 15 and 16.
I would say previous to 2010, even, it was probably lower. We could do some homework and figure out exactly what it's been over the last decade, but I think we've seen it fluctuate depending on the administration and who's in office at the time. But there was an ad hoc committee review done of the executive's compensation, and they did make a finding out of that ad hoc committee and a recommendation that the mayor of Stevensville should be compensated at $20,000 for at least 20 hours a week. Patrick?
Did the $20,000 continue for the entire mayor's term, or was that once the requirement for 20 hours of work was over, then the council were to bring that down to $10,000. What was the decision that caused the salary to go from $20,000 down to $10,000?
It was the mayor's, after previous Mayor Minmack, that said that it was not right to take that kind of money, and they took it upon themselves to lower it.
So to clarify, Mayor Ludington filled after Mayor Minmack, and he left the compensation at $20,000 a year, but he only took $10,000 a year out of that line for himself. The other $10,000 a year he reserved in there for additional staff to support his office should he need it. So he didn't, because he couldn't be here full time, he said, or he couldn't be here even 20 hours a week, he said, I'm going to pull that back to $10,000, compensating myself, leaving the other $10,000 for other resources. Mayor Cruz, his decision was reduce the entire amount, and so the entire salary at that time, or the entire line item for salaries and wages for the executive was dropped down to $10,000 a year.
So most mayors in towns this size are a little larger. It's not really based on hours, is it? It's a part, and you just get, they get a monthly stipend. Mm-hmm.
And every community does it just a slightly different way. Yeah. And if you ask the mayors across the state, they'd all say that whatever they're making now is not enough for the time they spend in the position. And that's just because that's just the nature of the position. There's never enough. So Ms. Holcomb, are you going to argue or?
Well, I will, because at one time when this was brought up before, I did ask the mayors at one of our trainings in May, and all of them pretty much said, if you're doing it for the pay, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
No, that's absolutely correct. That's absolutely true. Well, nobody's arguing that.
So
I'm not proposing this salary increase for the pay or for the financial benefits myself. I do think, though, regardless of who the mayor is, their time is worth something. Their time with this organization, their leadership in this organization, And the commitment it takes to keep things running smoothly here, both on the council's behalf and for the citizens, is certainly time consuming and does require some level of support work. So,
we'll get into this.
Oh, sure.
I just have one more. So when you were elected mayor, that was in 2018.
18.
The salary was
$10,000 a year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With the
extra little letter, Councilman Gibson.
I just asked what the salary was when he was elected mayor.
With the expectation he worked 10 hours a week.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So the workload demands, from the organization as a whole show that a typical week in the mayor's office is 35 to 40 hours a week. Depends on what's going on this time of year with the budget going on. It's obviously much, much more. It all depends on the flux, but we're averaging it out. That's what it looks like. Fiscal year 2020's budget seeks to maintain that $25 an hour compensation at 30 hours a week, which you instituted, the council at the time instituted during a transition phase. So the total annual compensation for the position is $39,000. That's obviously not all lumped into the general fund. That's spread out across all the funds because that person is responsible to administer all of those funds and manage those. And so you can see here where the allocations are made up. A good portion of it is split between water and sewer because those are all our enterprises. And then the rest is divvied out across either the TIF fund, building fund, airport in general. So, looking at the hours and task category breakout, it was strongly recommended that we do an analysis of what are the routine functions in the mayor's office, what is it that they're expected to do. We categorized those pieces and just did a quick snapshot over the last, 3-4 months of what is it that I'm spending my time on, how is the mayor, utilizing their skills and time. Obviously, we're seeking compensation 30 hours a week, $25 an hour. I realize that the chart adds up to 32 hours a week, but that was what the results provided. So we went with the 32 hours are in the chart. So you get 2 bonus hours out of the deal. It's not to, just to be clear, it's $25 an hour. That's the breakdown of the hourly cost of the mayor's office, but it's truly a salary. It's not something that that would be accruing any overtime or anything. It's capped at 30 hours. If the job takes 60, then we reassess what is it we're doing, more staff needed. What are the dynamics? But I think it's important when you look at what does the mayor do. I think a lot of us like to think that we're a very small community of 16 to 1800 people, and not really much changes here, and we've been the same for the last 2 decades, and that's just not a realistic thought. That we've grown considerably. 2018's estimate put us over 2,000 people in Stephensville. We're seeing developers come in, and they're starting to make offers on subdivisions, on land that is proposed to be subdivided in the city limits. So there's a lot of work. And if you look at other communities, we're no different of the commission and executive form of government, where this position is essentially the city manager, much like other governments that have that type of form of government. So in our form, the city manager and mayor are combined into one. In other forms, they're split into two, and the mayor lives in the legislative branch. So that's something to keep in mind is that it's more than, this position is more than just, signing checks on Friday and kissing babies during election season. There's management that the staff and department heads need and expect from the organization to be successful.
Well, of course, I would hope if you're campaigning, you're not doing that on your work time.
No, absolutely not. I have never kissed a baby. During
never? Work hours. Not even your own?
Well, we're not supposed to talk about that. So that covers the salaries of the mayor's office. Are there any other questions on that specifically from the council? We've addressed your
questions?
There was a breakdown of hours in the budget of what you're putting your time into.
That one there?
Correct. So the expectation is that from this point forward, you're going to continue to require this many hours doing staff training, like 3 hours during staff training, 11 hours during consultation.
Yeah, I think as the staff develops and gets more comfortable with their position, I can see a reduction in staff training, obviously.
Sure.
Hoping that we don't see turnover.
Right. And planning, financial review,
right.
All of these other items, you have the expectation, even the staff consultation, you'd have the expectation that 11 hours would stay the same.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And what I realized looking through this, and I think what I did in lumping in staff consultation was, I just used the term consultation, was those are also hours that I'd spend working with you folks on, you know, whatever one-on-one meetings you require. To make sure you're up to speed, or you know, sending you out emails and making sure I'm pushing out information to you, keeping you informed. Those hours are available for you as well. So it's not that I'm, you know, seeking a raise in order to push all of my time into very competent staff, but also to make myself more available as a resource to you folks so that you're successful in your endeavors and policy making decisions here at this table.
I would like to ask some questions to the committee. When this was brought up, did you all reach out to other towns our size to see what their mayor made?
Prior to doing this evaluation, I had checked that online to research, to review the small town mayors. Now, one of the little things I did learn was our previous mayor's compensation was about in balance with that previous number. I also noticed that there were a lot of city manager complimentary earnings beyond the mayor. So that was just personal research that I had done. Some of those small towns had supplemental earnings positions to the mayor, which I recognize as our mayor taking on now. But that was all review I did personally.
Okay. Because I did my own research too. So, and I've come up with where one town, the mayor only made $525 a month, and the hours varied per day. So,
and I think it's important when we're looking at this as a community, we keep in mind what are the needs of our community, what are the needs of Stevensville. It's certainly helpful to have the information of what other communities do, because let's face it, our day-to-day routine in the office is even based off of what another community might do in a certain situation. We're resourceful that way. But keeping in mind, what are the needs of Stevensville? What does Stevensville need? If it's determined that Stevensville doesn't need a mayor and instead needs a staff member to administer the affairs of the town on that person's behalf, then that's a decision the council's faced with making. And you're certainly welcome to redirect that $39,000 into another position as long as I only have to come in and sign checks for this. Taking it that way. So,
okay.
Any other questions from council?
Let's move on. This, I suggest.
The other outcome that we were after is public safety staffing and coverage. First and foremost, we'd like to see an increase to staffing in this police department of one full-time equivalent, which would bring our total sworn personnel to 4 people. And that includes the school resource officer and retaining that position with partial reimbursement from the school district. So
Increase to 5 with a resource. Is that what your thing said?
So this would include the chief of police,
right?
The school resource officer,
right?
A day shift officer and a night shift officer. The total staffing of the police. Sorry, you're right. The total staffing of the police department would include the civilian employee of the police department. So that would bring 5 people in the police department, but it'd be 4 sworn officers. Okay. So they have 1 civilian. That then allows us to continue to provide adequate day shift coverage. And then partial nighttime coverage. In order to fully staff 24/7 the police department, we need approximately 5 to 6 officers to do that in order to cover vacations and all that. And that would be outside of the school resource officers, so we're looking at a sworn personnel number of 6 or 7. We're working towards that goal as we can, and we're taking as creative an approach to that as possible.
But really, right now, we're just trying to add one because we can't train more than one either. And this was something that the budget committee provided great insight to, is to, you know, the value of the school resource officer in our system. You know, and the discussion was, should that person be dedicated to the school, or should that person be brought onto the street, and maybe there's another agency, law enforcement, that can provide that service. And then the administration concurred with budget committee that really it's a best practice that we keep that school resource officer in a position within Stephensville's government, so that we can, you know, maintain the relationship we have with the school district. So
you're at, before you were reimbursed by Stephensville, correct?
We were at a lesser rate, yes.
And now you're requesting that, I saw that in the ad hoc, that this totally be funded by Stephensville?
No, we've asked them to, and obviously aren't going to do that. We will always have some skin in the game on the school resource officer, but they've increased the contribution that they're making to the town to offset the cost of that position.
So right now, though, you have two vacancies, Chief?
Yes. Oh, well.
The resource and a patrol.
Yeah. I mean, we have, if we put on another officer, it would be filling a current vacancy, going back to the original structure that we had. And that's.
But right now, with your original structure, you're still two people short, including the resource officer, correct?
Well, yes, no, it depends on how far back you go.
You might have to use like a circa 2009 number or something like that to help us understand the different.
How many police officers were you budgeted for in 2019, including the resource officer?
We included the resource officer, three of us.
Including you.
Including me, yes.
You, one officer, and the resource officer.
Yes.
And right now, there's you and one officer.
Correct.
Working. Okay.
Prior to that, though, is what I'm getting at, is that we have on the books the positions, just not the funding allocated, for another night shift officer. And that's what we're trying to do, is fill that position again, and obviously the SRO too.
You have that currently.
I'm sorry?
You have that currently without this extra one?
And again, I'm talking about positions, not necessarily the funding for them.
Right.
But the original allocation that we had was for three full-time officers, you know, covered, paid for by the town. The addition was the SRO, with the intent for the school to pick up the majority of that bill, so to speak. So that would be the fourth, if you want to look at
it. While you're here, I just have one more question for you. Mm-hmm. The two vehicles that are being requested are for the police department, correct?
Correct, yes.
And will you be able to, I'm sure, can you give us the mileage on those vehicles that you have now, and what did you have? You had high repair costs, or these are replacement vehicles, correct?
Correct.
So for your newest vehicle, how many miles does it have?
Robert has the mileage.
The two that would be replaced would be the 2012 Dodge Charger, and that's got 116,000 miles on it, and the 2011 Dodge Charger got 141,000 miles.
And say, so if you did get a car or two, I assume you would surplus that out, so there would be some money back. You can surplus it, can't you?
We can, and actually the cars that we obtained originally were retired highway patrol cars.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously it's a problem to put something that somebody else doesn't want into service. It creates the problem that we're in. It's kind of this never-ending cycle of repair and maintenance and swapping vehicles out.
But if you replace these vehicles, I assume you're not planning on keeping them sitting here.
No.
The old ones.
We would recover some money from those.
Okay.
But we do have to, we're trying to kind of cycle out the really old stuff first. And we have two Crown Vics that are very old, very dilapidated.
But why don't you get rid of them? Why are they here?
We're going to.
Because we find ourselves using them, because we've had recently two of the vehicles that we're discussing here, the Chargers go down, and we've had to use the Crown Vics. One Crown Vic was donated to us, which was great, so we didn't really have to put a lot of money into that.
but the maintenance and the upkeep on it is...
So will we be able to get the record of that next meeting? The maintenance costs for these vehicles?
Yeah.
You've got to report for it.
Okay.
Sorry, I just saw you step in.
No, it's still fine.
Any other questions on the police department staff? Anything else? Okay. In keeping with the public safety staffing theme, we'd also like to bolster volunteer staffing within the fire department, and so we added some money into recruitment and retention in order to accomplish that. So that will be a developing project for them as they continue the year. I keep pointing at them. Traffic and pedestrian safety and community access improvements that we're making throughout the community. We're utilizing some gas tax funding to aid in some of the speed issues and signage improvements for road development as we enter into the fiscal year. And one of those, there's an example here as a picture, is the installation of electronic signage in the school zones, which can be removed and then reinstalled in the parks during the summer. So we obviously don't see a ton of traffic on Park Avenue during the summertime. When school's out, we don't necessarily have the speeding issues that we do during the school year. So we'd like to redirect those signs into the areas where we get the complaints about speeding adjacent to parks, specifically Father Valley Park and going into Lewis and Clark. So we're excited to try those out. Those signs are solar powered, as it's displayed here. The other thing it does, as we learn more about these signs, is that it tracks traffic patterns. So it's doing traffic counts for us. It's giving us average speeds and of what cars are traveling through before they get caught speeding by the sign. So we'll have some good data for transportation by acquiring these on a very reasonable cost without paying someone to sit and count traffic. We can now get a good idea of when these are placed, and they are portable, they can be attached to different signs. We can kind of get some data, figure out where are the other places in our community where these can be effective, supplementing with patrols. Obviously, we want to see patrols and the black cars out on the pavement as well. These don't replace those, but they help supplement, the knowledge, and part of that is just letting people know, hey, you're speeding. The crosswalk markings and key intersections, if there's a crosswalk out there that needs to be painted or has never been painted, we're going to identify those through Public Works, and George has done some of that work, figure out where crosswalks need to be painted and what crosswalks need to be repainted as, springtime comes back around and the clouds scrape everything off the road. So that will be completed. And then we've got some funding in the sidewalk replacement fund in order to conduct or do some sidewalk repairs, some replacements of sidewalk, and then as funding allows, we'll do some new installations as well. But one of those would be, you'll notice 3rd Street almost has a complete sidewalk on one side of the street, and that's partially helpful because construction happened and those homeowners put new sidewalks in, but we're a block short of having one sidewalk all the way down one side of 3rd Street. So it'd be really cool if, besides Main Street, Stevensville had one other street that had an entire sidewalk on it in its original town site. So that's one place we're looking at making sidewalk upgrades. Certainly any route that children take to school through walking, we're going to upgrade those sidewalks and make sure that they're good as well. So it'll take some time to spend all of the money available in that sidewalk fund, but we want to take a small chunk of that this year. The other sidewalk repair that's not sort of coming out of the sidewalk fund, but is allocated in parks is, if you remember, it was a long, long, long project, way longer than it needed to be, but we finally updated the bathrooms in Lewis and Clark Park and got those open this summer. And they're operating fantastically. We're not having issues with vandalism or anything like that. And in fact, we're getting ready to winterize those very soon. With that, though, when we remodeled, the sidewalks were removed around the building. And so, for ADA access, sand isn't the easiest thing to get a chair through or even to walk through. So we'll replace the sidewalks that were removed around that building as well.
It's a Parks and Recreation project.
Our reliability of the infrastructure and then its effectiveness is something we want to address. Everybody can easily recall the water shortage that we experienced, or the issue with the well field that we experienced earlier this summer. But first, we'll discuss vehicle replacements. There are two vehicles for the police department, as we previously discussed, in order to first and foremost, we're having maintenance issues with the cars we have, and we want reliable vehicles for any positions we bring on, obviously. So we're
so will you have a cost?
There's $80,000 in the budget for those vehicles.
To buy the new ones, to equip cars, all that stuff.
Correct.
Okay. The other one, the next one coming up, I assume isn't that much.
No. The one vehicle for building inspection has a budget of $35,000.
And what, same question, do they have a vehicle now?
They don't currently have a vehicle now.
So what do?
They use their personal vehicles.
And then you pay a mileage?
If they ever turn it in. They're not, I mean, they don't, it's not something that they're used to tracking, they're used to just using their vehicles, but both inspectors actually, own their own business and have their business name.
Well, just keep those people on, they don't need a car.
They have their business name on the side of their vehicle, and so we prefer that if they're going to represent the town at an inspection or at a building site, that they're not representing their business, but maybe they're representing the town of Stevensville as an employee, and that they can be taken seriously. So that's something we look forward to. The building fund, the building fund does have a serious surplus. It has an excessive surplus in it, where we need to spend down some of that funding, or the state is going to just pull it from us and we'll use it towards building inspector education or something boring like that. And so because building fees are coming in much quicker and costs aren't necessarily what we expected to be, they're spending down some of their surplus, and the vehicles seem to be a good candidate. The building department is looking at a software platform to electronically keep their records, because right now everything's kept through paper and carbon copies. And it's a nightmare to track inspections, and for our part-time building staff, it's difficult for them to interface with the office to get inspections scheduled and those types of things. And so they may, depending on how much that software, they're working on that project actively, and we don't have a good estimate as to what that software will cost. We have a contingency in their fund for it, but they may want to use some of that vehicle funding for that instead of using it for a vehicle. So they have that option, but that's something that continues to develop and keep the council updated is what their decision is.
One more car question for the chief. And I assume, it's reasonable, I assume you take your vehicle home, correct? To be
yes.
On call. Does the other, if you have the other officer, not the resource, does he take the vehicle home?
Yes.
Okay. And I mean that. Pretty
long. I don't remember. Does it be a police department vehicle? Does that include the outfit charges? Yes. It does include the outfits?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think the base, and this is the state bid process that we look at. I think it was $26,000 and some change, roughly, for a new truck. Incidentally, when the last time the town bought a new police vehicle was in 2013. And it was, I think, $27,000 at that time. So they've actually gone down in price, which is odd. You don't normally see that. But to outfit a vehicle, it depends. I mean, we're pretty frugal. We definitely shop around. But you're looking at anywhere from, I would say, conservatively $15,000 to $18,000, somewhere around there. Yeah.
So we'll use that $80,000 towards at least, depending on what the bids come back to. Because what we do is we do an acquisition to the state and let them know, hey, we'd like two vehicles or three vehicles, whatever the case may be. They put that up to the state bid, so we get their buying power. The state sends them back to us and says, here's what they came back to be. Do you want them or not? And then we can make that decision then as to whether we want one vehicle or two, depending on how those bids come in. But we have an $80,000 set aside. Third Spring Street has been a project we've kind of tried to light a fire under. If you remember back in 2018, we had big hopes to kind of accomplish that project and then fell short of some funding. Incidentally, then, the state legislature raised gas tax 2 cents a gallon, which certainly helped the town of Stevensville in moving forward on that project. We're looking at phasing that project into reasonable phases so that we don't pay too much in mobilization costs each phase, but that it's still cost effective to complete the project. So Spring Street didn't winter very well, and we don't expect it to winter again very well. And so we were hoping to next spring overhaul the easterly side of 3rd Street and Spring Street as well. So one example would be where Spring Street intersects with 2nd Street. It was like a volcano blew out of the roadway just because of the cold and the snow and the water that was on that roadway. What we found was that road wasn't built to any specific standard. It was more or less just they threw some gravel down maybe and then like, you know, an inch of asphalt was all, if that. So it wasn't very well designed for our climate or the traffic it receives. So that's a project that we see significant investment into out of the gas tax fund. Water system issues, there's a number of areas in that that all kind of intertwine with each other that we kind of separate out to discuss, and that is the water rights that have been an issue for the town of Stevensville well over decades, but most recently since we installed the well field in 2013. Though three of the four wells had a permit application put into DNRC, that permit application was denied by DNRC, and then the project didn't really move much from there with the administration at the time. And so we've now retained a water rights attorney out of Missoula who has worked on the town's water rights previously. And he's working with the NRC on a regular basis to figure out what is the best approach to getting these wells permitted so that we don't incur any fees from the NRC for pumping water we don't own out of the ground, and that long-term the town's water rights are secure, they're protected, and they'll service into the future. Part of that issue with their change application and the permitting with the wells is that we're the place of use for when you put a well or you say you're using water, the NRC wants to know where you're using it. So usually we draw a line around the city, says here's where we're gonna use the water. That line hasn't been updated since like the 70s, and so obviously, we're using water outside the line, and we need to correct that. And so DNRC, being in a closed basin in the Bitterroot, it's been problematic to get that accomplished. But some recent water law changes and rulings from the Supreme Court have helped with that. So Ross will keep us updated on that as we progress, but nonetheless, it's going to cost a lot of money and take a long time. Something I know you want to hear. The well field and the land it sits on. If you remember, the well field, we continue to evaluate that with HDR engineering to figure out, okay, what is the useful life of the pumps we have in there? The pumps obviously failed short of what we thought they should have lasted. You know, we expected those pumps should last around 20 years as a well pump. And in looking at the hours and the gallons that those pumps are producing, we're now rethinking that philosophy. And we feel that now is more important than ever that we retain some sort of reserve to replace those pumps more frequently, because we expect that they'll continue to fail in a shorter time period than we originally thought. So we're trying to figure out how many hours and how many gallons a pump is really worth to us or will be useful to us before it fails, instead of using a year. You know, usually with assets, we'd say, well, the last 5 years, or the last 10 years, or the last 20 years, we don't know. With pumps, we're looking at, okay, maybe it'll last 50,000 hours or 100,000 gallons, whatever the case may be. So that's something we're looking at out of the four wells at the 20 pumps well field. One of the other things in the well field that is not necessarily a surprise, I think, to the council was the discussion around when the wells failed, and we had them looked at, and we said, whoa, these are very close together for wells. You know, they're clustered in a strange way, and that, you know, was entirely dependent on the engineers that designed the well field back in the day it was built. But the recommendation has been made that, well, the town should really look at acquiring more property so that the well field can be expanded, storage can be expanded. There's also a this is in a council packet, I believe. There is a infiltration gallery. That's what they call it. It's basically a fancy pond that's on the property adjacent to the well field that Missoula Federal Credit Union owns today. That infiltration gallery recharges the well system during the wintertime when irrigation flows drop, and it helps mitigate the water use out of the Bitter River that our wells impact. So as we're pumping water out of the ground, the river flows drop. And so that infiltration gallery is designed to help recharge those flows. We don't own the land that infiltration gallery sits on, so the engineers believe it's advantageous that we do acquire that, and it lends itself to other opportunities for the town as the town grows and develops and we need more space for our well plant, or our water plant. So the council approved going forward in negotiating or investigating a land acquisition adjacent to the well field. Property appraisal has been completed, and it's ready to come back to council. And then the council just needs to decide on what sort of offer they want to put in on that property if they want to pursue that project. The costs for all of that are included in the budget here. So that's part of the well field and land piece. Leakage is not an uncommon term in this room, and that is tied back into our well field. That you know, the amount of leakage in our system certainly isn't doing the wells or the pumps any favors in production of gallons, right? Because we're pumping more water than we're actually using or need to use, and so those pumps are working harder and producing more, and et cetera. So before we get too far into the water storage project, we'd really like to see us do some work on some leak repairs. We know for the most part where those leaks are. We know that the reservoir is leaking somewhere around 4 million gallons. Depends on the day, if it's the day or the month. It leaks a lot of water, but they can't investigate that right now because of the high water table where the well or the reservoir sits. So when the water table drops down in the fall, they can dig and figure out what's going on. I think maybe it's the valve, the main drain out of the reservoir. If that's the case, then they'll work to repair them. So that'll help with some of the 14 million gallons of water we're losing out of our system. There's also some leaks under some streets throughout town. You know, perhaps 4 to 5 of those that we know about that we have determined we can get those repaired. And then we don't know where, but we know throughout the city there are service lines that are leaking. And those are the responsibility not of the town, but of the property owner. Unfortunately, we can't figure out who's leaking because the meters are all in their houses, not out on the street. So if a service line is leaking, you know, we sometimes can find that through leak detection. We hire the leak detectors to come in and search them. We can find some of those service leaks for them and let those homeowners know that they're responsible to fix those, but there's some under there we just don't know about. And those will always happen in aging infrastructure. So we hope that fixing the reservoir and fixing the main leaks that we know about will really cut back on that leakage. The other piece that we expect we can contribute to some of the leakage is our water meters. The older a water meter gets, the less accurate it reads in terms of the water that's flowing through it. But it's not charging more water, because I know everybody's thinking, oh, well, maybe my water meter's so old it's double charging me. That's not the case. Actually, it charges you less. And so the less accurate it reads, then that's more leakage. So if it's not reading as many gallons that are actually going through it, it's going to show us a leak in our system. And so we're starting to replace some meters that are very, very old, especially the very large meters, such as the ones at the public school. Those are very large meters, or like, you know, 3 or 4 inch meters. And the larger the meter, the less accurate it reads, but also the older the meter, the less accurate it reads. And so sometimes those meters can be anywhere between 60 to 80% with accuracy, and no meter will ever be 100% accurate. So that's how we're approaching our leakage. And we do have a number of meter replacements built into the budget because there is a recall on our a number of meters that would require a repurchase of warranty in order to fix those. So we'll be in some people's houses over the winter and the spring replacing a few meters out. And then there is a very small line item in the Gene Thomas Carts Beautification Fund, which I know has kind of been a hot button issue for the community and for the council. The budget committee really wanted to see some portion of that money being spent on something. We continually, from the business community, hear issues about, you know, picnic tables and creamery bars are, you know, they're falling apart. We can never get a scout in there to fix them up. You know, or the project never gets completed. It's no fault of theirs. It's usually just weather or whatever the case would be. So, in order to, you know, help with maintenance costs in the public works department and the parks department, we thought, well, let's pull those tables out and replace them with some maintenance-free tables. In that regard, so we'll take questions at the end. Okay. In parks, there is some funding in there for the Parks Board to finish their master plan. So if you recall, when we got the Gene Thomas money, the council at the time gave the direction to the Park Board, in order to know how best to utilize this funding, we should have a plan in place as to what the priorities are in the parks system. Park Board has done a lot of work in getting that plan done. And they're, you know, very close to the finish line. And so if there's a resource they need, whether that be a consultant or some other, you know, if it's printing costs or whatever the case, even staff time to help compile that, pull that plan together so we can utilize it, then we've got a little bit of money in our parks, not a lot, but a little bit to help offset that and accomplish that goal. So we know how we're moving forward in the next decade for the park system. The other infrastructure piece I'll just touch on, it's not on the slideshow, but we covered it tonight, was the airport project. And mind you, a lot of that funding and appropriation and revenues is somewhat in flux, and so we're continually adjusting that depending on what, how the project goes. Now that we have bids, we'll have a better idea of what's put in the budget exactly and what FAA is going to kick in. So that's one piece that's a very large project. That we need to keep in mind. So, obviously, these are very complicated and elaborate projects. Some of them are, some of them are very simple. But, you know, Third Street resurfacing, the water system issues, and the airport project are all very considerable projects that are going to take some time on my part and on the staff's part in order to appropriately facilitate and get those accomplished. So public works, this is the other position we're asking for. We saw a reduction in FTEs in the administration with the administrative assistant reducing their hours back to 20 hours a week for the fire department. And then the other 20 hours a week that person spent, or that position spent in the administration, we reduced. And that was a cooperative effort between fire department and administration. That wasn't, nothing bad happened. That was just the decision. We said, this will work for us. So we redirected the funding that would ordinarily go to administration and put that into public works so that public works could bring on one more FTE. We recognize that the overtime in public works doesn't necessarily, or doesn't really even at all, justify an extra position, meaning that there's not 2,080 hours of work, or overtime rather, that's being incurred to justify the position. But we do recognize that there are tasks and pieces of the public works department that we're maybe falling short on performance in. And one of those is parks maintenance. We seem to be pretty successful this summer, but the parks maintenance crew really had to work double time, and that, you know, that did, there were some sacrifices made organization-wide to make that happen. So this would add a laborer to the public works staff so that we can make sure that our lawns are mowed, and cemeteries are taken care of and trimmed, that our park system is maintained, you know, garbages are routinely emptied, and bathrooms are maintained. One piece that you don't think about, but, you know, because we drive by it every day, but we don't necessarily think to replace it, is the wood chips at the playground. We're currently deficient in wood chips, and we have the wood chips, we just haven't put them in the playground, and that's just because the staff in the public works department is being pulled in multiple directions. And so this addition of this person should help manage some of those pieces. A position, unlike some of the other public works positions, so two of the positions of the outdoor staff are split between water and sewer. So 50% water, 50% sewer. Primarily those people work in those departments only. The public works director or public works supervisor, he's split out of the general fund, the water fund, and the sewer fund three ways. Our other public works assistant, the fourth person out of the crew, is split water, sewer, and general fund. And this person, they're split three ways, third, third, third. This position we're proposing is half general fund and half water sewer. So 25% water, 25% sewer, 50% general fund. We recognize that that position probably has more duties and more work in the general fund's operation than in the other fund. And so, you know, cleaning out the garbages on a regular basis on Main Street is one of those tasks that we kind of just take for granted. But when it doesn't happen, we notice it. And so the other thing this would do, as adding a position, the justification behind it was, it would allow the Public Works Department to switch to a 7-day-week schedule versus a 6-day-week schedule. So right now we have three people on, basically Monday. Tuesday through Saturday we have four people on, and Sunday we don't have anybody on. So one of those people works Saturday, and then Sunday is their weekend, essentially. By adding this position, we can then do 7-day-week coverage. The justification behind, or part of the theory behind that, is that, for example, on a Saturday, or even a Sunday, because it happens on a Sunday, we have a water main break that needs to be fixed. It can't wait till Monday. And so instead of calling in three people to work overtime, now we're just calling in one or two people to come in and work overtime because we already have one or two people already on shift. The other piece would be if we could get two people on during the weekends, that would tremendously help the cemetery operations, because if we only have one person on Saturday and we have a funeral, it takes two people to manage the burial. And so then we usually have to call somebody in on Saturday to help with that, and that usually inevitably, although we try to send people home early on Friday and get them out of here so that we don't incur overtime, inevitably it doesn't matter, we still get overtime. And so in order to kind of curb some of that practice and set us ahead, instead of saying, well, crap, there's so much work now, we can't get done, we need to do something, now we're kind of doing ahead of time so that, you know, we can grow into having five positions instead of right off the bat being overtime. So all in all, you're gaining probably, the net gain is less than 0.5, because ordinarily we would have two seasonal people on in the summers, and this year we just had one. So seasonal people have been in a difficult position to retain. It's not uncommon for the last few years anyway. We've had, you know, we could go through two or three a summer. So
I just have one more question, because I think you're done with that part. Page 80 of your budget, salary and wages.
Okay.
It appears to me, which I don't understand, maybe I'm seeing something, that some people are getting a raise and some aren't.
That's correct.
And what is that based upon?
So some, for the most part, those folks that were with us an entire year, are receiving a merit and COLA increase. There are some positions, full-time.
So wait. Are you proposing that in your budget, a merit and a COLA increase?
Correct.
And so you'll break that out, how much that costs?
It's not broken out before you.
But you will the next budget meeting?
I can.
Well, we need to. Because, frankly, what is your merit system?
The merit system...
I know what a merit system is. What is yours?
Our merit system is... they receive an evaluation from their supervisor based on, you know, below standard, at standard, or above standard. There's a series of productivity type aspects to that. Based on how that evaluation comes out, it's given a point scale. A poor evaluation, you know, below standard, would receive 0%. A meets expectations or meets standards would receive 1%, and above expectations would receive 2%. So because obviously there are some employees who get straight marks, you know, but there's always some who excel in some things and don't excel in others or meet standards. So sometimes an increase could be 1.7% or, you know, 0.5%.
I'm going to be really frank. There was something, the government tried it too, broadband pay. And there's been bills and audits, and especially in a small, and I'm not saying that people don't deserve a raise, I think we need to have that discussion, but you're basically determining that by one person. And what happened in the state government, it became a good old person system. You found administrators receiving high raises, people, correctional officers, not. I'm not a real fan of a merit system unless you have specific goals and objectives. So I guess I'm saying now that I'm going to have to really be convinced on this merit system, because I'm not in favor. Now, I am in favor, you know, whether it be COLA or even more, and I assume COLA is probably only at about 1.4% inflationary rate.
1.3. Yeah.
But I'd like to have a discussion that's equitable and fair to all the employees and look at a percentage raise. I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but I've had personal experience in this, and it's got blown up like crazy.
The last time.
And again, one more thing, because you only have what you told me, you have one individual making that decision on that employee, one department head making that decision on that employee's raise.
Not necessarily. All employee evaluations come across my desk as well.
The supervisor of the department. The
supervisor
does the
evaluation. And then it's verified to make sure that it's fair and accurate too. There's only so much I can do. If I don't work with an employee on a day-to-day basis, I have no idea. But you're right. In the majority, in most of our positions, I am a supervisor. So I am making that decision as to whether they're.
Well, just, I'm not trying to be unfair.
No.
I'm not trying to be unfair. It's also difficult to budget for, because you could end up, other than what this sheet shows, you could end up giving everybody a 3% merit and a COLA. And how could the town budget for that? There's no way to know that. But when you have, whether it's a percentage or an hourly, the council and the people know what the budget is. So this doesn't really allow that information.
We do evaluations in April so that salaries can be calculated for the coming budget year.
But you're proposing here for this year's budget, which we're 2 months into, you're proposing raises already for certain people and not.
They don't get a raise in April. Their evaluation in April determines the raise they get July 1st.
I understand that. But we haven't passed this budget yet.
Correct.
So it would be retroactive.
Correct. That's been the practice.
We need to have a discussion. We need the cost of what some of these raises are, what the overall cost is. And again, I'm just being really honest with you. And I think all employees probably do an excellent job. And I think we need to be fair and equitable. And of course, if you get into a percentage raise, the person that's been here the longest, the person has the highest, is going to get a higher percentage. That's understandable. But this merit thing and the way this is presented makes no sense at all. I mean, I see people, I don't know these people, but they get zero. Some get three.
So some of them are seasonal. Some of them have been with us only a month.
Well, I don't want to get into it, but you know what I'm talking about. I won't get into a personal individual here, but I can see a raise for an individual healer. It's not seasonal. That has a $3 an hour raise. And I can see another one that's not seasonal that has zero.
And you just have to ask me about those and I'll explain them. Some of them would be equalization, meaning they were hired at a lesser rate than the work expected for them.
Most people are hired at a lesser rate with less experience. I mean, you have longevity, you have experience.
Right. That's and so normal. As time goes on,
that's vacancy.
Some wages fall out of place with its equal work. Meaning if we have two employees who are expected to do the same job and their qualifications are compatible, but their wage rates, because of whatever reason, have fallen out of whack, and we justify bringing those back into equalization. I mean, it's not the first time that's been done in this organization. When the council adopted the merit system, it was done back in 2012. And that was because the longevity system we had was impacting the budget in worse ways than merit could be. For exactly the reasons you mentioned, people who were here the longest saw an incredible increase versus those who hadn't been here for very long. So it's something that we can certainly stick on council's agenda to reevaluate how our employees evaluated, what is the best system to do that. And we can certainly do some studying into our current system and figure out, are the evaluations we're performing over the last 5 years, are they fair? Are they accurate?
Well, one thing we are going to need, no matter what, we're going to need to know what this costs, the increases, these raises for those who get them. And I'm also assuming when it lists a salary, that doesn't include benefits either.
That's correct.
And we need benefits. That's a cost, which everybody's entitled to. But obviously, when you get vacation, you get health, you get all that, it's more than what this shows.
Yes, and that's built into the size
so
of
we can
the
have
section.
That. We can have that information.
You want it broken down.
I want, if you're going to get, you gave me right here salaries of all these people. All you have to do is add the benefits.
Well, and to be clear, these are the positions, not necessarily individuals. So there could be multiple people in each position, but we can break that down by those positions.
Well, there's not a multiple person. Police at Chile, there's not a multiple.
No, but there are multiple police officers and there are multiple public officers.
And their salaries are listed, and they're different.
Well, they're listed as a range. I mean, we have, in theory, we would have 5 public works assistants. That their range, their salary range of that position is listed there.
Well, with cost of living, and again, people need to have some form, in my mind, a raise.
Sure. Absolutely, they should, yeah.
But anyway, we'll have a discussion on this, but I need to know what the benefits are and what the cost of these raises, the people that are getting raises, the positions that are getting raises, what's that extra cost?
I would like to see on here, what are we planning on paying a seasonal employee versus a full-time, year-round employee as well?
Okay.
And I have one more situation. Where and what does the aerobics instructor do?
I think it's water.
That's
aerobics.
Like a swimming pool.
Yeah, it is water aerobics.
I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah, and I mean the reason I am, they work 3 hours, or they excuse me, they work like 2 hours twice a week.
Okay.
Any other questions from council? That basically covers up the big pieces that I wanted to cover. In a large fashion, so are there specific questions in the document you'd like me to answer, or yes? Or further, how would you like to proceed into another meeting?
Well, I would assume the next scheduled meeting will go through the budget.
We can. Not the special meeting that we plan to hold next week, but the following.
Right.
September.
But you said that would just be for the airport.
Correct. So, I mean, we can hold as many meetings whenever you want, but
so do you
currently
want
the next scheduled meeting is September 12th. So if you want a meeting between now and then, you just need to know the schedule.
Whatever the next meeting is, I guess I have a question for you. So if there will be discussion, I assume, from all the council members, certain areas. Can we just make, whether it's an increase or a no or a yes, the council can just make verbal motions and amendments, or do we have to do those in writing? For example, say I make a motion to give you $60,000 a year instead of $39,000. Do I need to make a substitute motion, or do I need to make an amendment, or how do I?
No, I think you could just do that on the record. Okay. I challenge you to find a second.
I just used that. And then some of those questions that we had, we will have. And I assume the department heads will be here for the next, when we have the budget.
Yeah, you have some department heads here tonight.
Because really they should be whether it's Waterworks or whatever, they should be answering questions, not putting you on the spot for everything.
Well, it keeps me informed as to what the activity is in your department.
Well, he'll be here.
So,
I mean, it should be the police chief. He'll have the best argument. I mean, he's an officer.
Sure.
That's his job.
So, like I said, tonight was an introductory meeting to kind of get you, you know, baptized, for lack of a better term, into the budget and help the administration, I get a sense of where it is in the budget. You know, where do we need to make modifications? It sounds like we need some clarification in the budget documents on a few charts and some additions in that. And so we'll start working on those right away. As much comprehensive information as you can.
I do have one question back with the employees. I've seen at one point that we lowered the judges' pay. Is that true?
No. The judge has always been $18,000 a year.
Okay.
Well, I mean, always. Since we've had Judge O'Connor, we've always had $18,000 a year. In fact, I think it may have been that compensation during Judge Klopoff's term as well.
Okay, because it looked like it was lowered in the budget.
It did look like that.
So just to be clear, in the judges, I'm sorry, this happens every single year. Maybe there's a way we can fix it. In the city court budget, salaries and wages do not include the judge. The judge is a contracted position. Her salary comes out of professional services. The salaries and wages line covers her clerk. Because the clerk is an employee, the judge isn't. So that's the, so if you're looking for the judge's salary, that would be contained in professional services, line 350. But in this case, in this chart, Robin, it would be under operating versus salaries and wages.
Okay.
Yeah. So salaries
and
wages.
That's why I asked.
And the reason that was lower, and the reason that's lower is because of turnover in the staff, and there's a new staff member in that position, okay. So she's being paid less than a former staff member.
Okay.
Any other questions I can answer from the council? Okay. I'm happy to take questions from the. Take questions from the public if they dare to ask. Ms. Barton.
I just had a question. You had said that the master plan for the park was just about on completion. My concern is that board has not met in over a year or more, and you're stating that these things are coming to a close on what the funds should be used for. That needs to go back into the park board for the Gene Thomas, and it has to be approved through that board. You can't just take that money out and say, this is what you're going to do with it, and then appropriate it through the council. It has to go in front of that park board.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Questions? Bill?
Bill Perrin, 503 Charles. Many of the things that I had down to address, and I appreciate that. I guess I'm looking more at maybe a little higher level, not the minutia of it, but look at kind of what you were presenting as to what do the funds do for the particular parts of our city and the operation of it. And so just maybe if you could tell me what the new things are, you know, what corrections are made or what improvements have been made, you know, with the budget this year. And I don't care about the dollars. I'm more interested just in how we're addressing. And that's pretty much what you were talking about tonight, pretty much how you presented. One of the questions was the building department. And of course, we see that, you know, that's generates enough revenue for that. So we have two part-time people, and that's correct.
Correct.
And they can adequately handle it.
Yes, there's a slight increase in hours for one of them because we, you know, there's also an increase in revenue that's projected because we expect an uptick in activity with the school's remodel project.
Okay. And economic development, do we have anything, and do we have a fund for that, for everything that's going on?
Yes, we do. The economic development fund, and this was something that the budget committee expressed great, I don't want to say enthusiasm, but they wanted to see economic development use in the town's budget somehow. Okay. So there is a proposal for a contract with the Main Street Association again. as we had had in the past, to take some of the economic development functions off of the current staff desks. There's also some pass-through funding from the Big Sky Trust Fund, and there is some funding in there budgeted. It's anticipated, we don't know for sure that we'll receive it, so it's not enough to be spent until it's received. But there is some CDBG grant funding we expect to hope to receive for some planning.
So all of that will address the economic development.
Yeah.
Okay. Airport, then, you talked earlier tonight, you have a project that you have some FAA money, and you have matching funds then?
Correct. And that's why the bid was broken down, I think, into four different options, was so that depending on what FAA came back with to say, yes, we'll fund this, no matter what, it's a 90-10 match. And so we do have to come up with that 10 match. And so in order to help leverage our funds the best way, we wanted that broken down so we could choose which options we do in case we don't have cash for the entire project. So we're not planning to fund or bond any of the airport funding projects or improvement projects.
And will we have some revenue this year for the airport?
Correct. So the Forest Service is utilizing the airport for firefighter operations, the SAF fires, and so we are anticipating additional revenue in the airport for that.
I got pretty well down with what the budget that we'll do for the police department this year. We're trying to do an additional FTEs and all that sort. But as I still understand, we will have one more officer, but we'll still be a half a resource officer that they pull into school.
Correct.
That changes. Okay.
So their summer is basically being utilized to cover the vacations of the people who are here with the cars in the school.
Okay. Parks, then the 3,500 years from Chief Thomas, what were you proposing?
It's for the tables at the Kramer.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sewer, we did not look at anything.
There's nothing major planned for sewer this year because of the energy put into the water department.
Okay. Now, the money that we have set aside for storage, where are you at on that process of building the water? I mean,
they're really trying to narrow
it this year for them.
So we're budgeting for the full project this year, just in case for whatever reason we're able to really ramp up. But HDR is really trying to narrow down where the best place is for that storage and how much storage do we need, and that's a moving target given the leakage. So we're going to address the leakage in order to figure out exactly what storage.
What is that? How much is that? How much money do we accumulate? You
know, not off the top of my head, but Robert's got the cash for it.
One of the things, I think if I remember right, we were in the rate structure, we had $60,000 a year that would either go for debt service or be able to accumulate enough money to provide the storage.
So we've got several restricted accounts in the water fund.
Right.
Restricted for construction is $362,000 and change. There's $91,000 for future bond payments.
Right.
And there's $169,000 for depreciation replacement. The operating fund, there's some money that needs to be transferred out of the operating cash,
right,
because that's at $612,000, and that's too much to operate on.
And so the 360 you've got, now that's 6 years of the 60.
Right.
It sounds like, because that's what we felt was building it.
Yeah, the rate structure was designed to pull in
for $60,000.
$60,000 a year. For that storage project.
Okay, so there is some more money other than the 360.
Yeah, it's just not been transferred.
And what's your estimate at this time of what that's going to cost?
$1 million.
Okay, sidewalks, we talked about planning department. What would happen to us next year under this budget if we had to haul snow?
There's funding. So one option is, like we did last year, we have spending authority for the street projects for 3rd Street and Spring Street. So if we saw, and some of the negative office staff are saying, the Farmer's Almanac says we're going to do another winter like we did last year, and we're not listening to them because that's just expensive. But we're staying, if we need to, we can use some of that spending authority and gas tax to do snow removal again if we need to, because those projects won't happen until spring. There's no way we're going to get 30
so it would be an expensive project.
So it would come off the project, which means the project cost would be reduced. The other alternative is there will be some reserve in the gas tax funding anyway, because we're not spending all of it. And so you could use some of the reserve funding in the gas tax to offset that, or you could use general fund reserve funding. General fund's reserve is just shy of 40%. So it's a healthy reserve to cover an expense like that should we incur it.
Okay. All right. And then is it still that part of town is where we have a problem with the drainage? I mean, would that, is that going to be typical for us to have a problem in that area?
Oh,
in that area of town, as snowbill.
Yeah, our primary, where we focus our efforts there is any area that doesn't have any drains. So the Dayton subdivision is one of those where it's all downhill, but it's all curb and gutter and no drainage. And then, the other streets that we cover as well have congestion issues because of side street parking and that sort of thing, so we like to address that.
All right, and finally, I see you have fireworks in there for revenue. You have an expenditure and revenue.
We do. That's always every year kind of comes up as an issue as to where that money comes from, where does it go, how is it expended. We created a dedicated separate account for fireworks in the general fund. It's under the community events line. And then if you look under local grants in the revenue line, that local grants is to offset the those expenses.
Okay. All right. Now, any in reading a recap, I got one of the pages. We're showing capital projects, then $167,000 is the beginning balance. $71,000, is that the transfer from the carryover from the previous year?
Not entirely, no. Okay. $40,000 is the transfer.
Okay.
And then the other $11,000 of it is income from mills.
From what?
From mills. So we reduced the general fund mills. This is something I could have covered in.
Okay.
We reduced the general fund mills by 4 mills in order to provide, it's not the best consistent funding stream for the capital fund, but it's something. And we've had challenges in maintaining capital funding in that fund. And so in order to maybe start that trend, we thought, well, let's give a designated funding stream of 4 mills to that fund.
So typically, the only way we've ever funded any of that has been by carryover.
This year it's a combination of carryover.
But you have a combination. Okay. And that's how many mills?
Roughly, just under 4. It comes out to $11,000.
Okay.
And folks will see that on, they should anyway, if the county does it correctly. They should be able to see those mills go into the capital fund. So they'll see Town of Stevensville General Fund, Town of Stevensville Capital Fund, and so they'll be able to tell how much of their tax dollars are going to fund capital replacements in the community.
Okay, that makes sense. And finally, what are we doing? How's the fire department going to fare? What are we doing there?
For what now?
The fire department. What's going to happen with them this year? Anything special?
We're looking at some expansion of a doorway. We're trying to nail down some costs on that. So that's something that's going to flux in this budget for sure, because what we have in the area isn't adequate.
Okay.
The other thing is what we've carried over in capital is there's a large ticket item there. We've carried over because we didn't expend the SCDA grant funding this year. In the last fiscal year, so we moved that spending authority into the coming fiscal year, because when we get the bill, we need to pay it.
Okay.
So,
anything on lighting?
Oh yes, we did put some money in there. It's a modest amount, but it's $5,000 for lighting in that station.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? I would assume that if there's no questions, there's no public comment. Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Wasn't it September 4th? September 4th at 1 o'clock,
Shane. Yeah, I don't know. September 5th. He hasn't. He hasn't. You said you were.
I was. I thought I was.
Oh.